6 podcast. It's the Tuesday edition, which means that the backlash from Sunday's games has settled in nicely. We're going to talk about whether the Steelers' defense is old and busted once again this year. We'll talk about James Harrison's hit on Eric Decker and whether it was caused by the fines, the evil fines that were laid on James Harrison. We will talk about Jason Pierre-Paul's guarantee that the Giants will beat the Packers in Green Bay. Cleveland taking a hard look at a quarterback. Tampa Bay's coaching search, which extends the geriatric and Caucasian. And Jeff Fisher, whether he would prefer money or Sam Bradford. Ryan Wilson, are you prepared for an offseason dealing with questions about your Steelers defense?
No, I won't. They won't be questions from me. And
questions from the national media.
They ask a lot of questions. A lot of times those questions are born out of laziness and or boredom. So, no, I'm not worried about that. By the way, you forgot the most important topic of the day, our good buddy MDS from Pro Football Talk.
Oh, yeah, and MDS. I'm sorry.
Why do you hate him so much?
I don't. I just assumed that by the time that people started hearing us, they would have already fast-forwarded to MDS. So, you know.
Okay. Yeah, but you mentioned that on Monday you were on a couple radio shows because you like to tell me all the things you do off air. But apparently on those shows, other than you being completely awesome, is that you got some questions about the Steelers' defensive age.
Yeah. In fact, I was on – I thought this was interesting. I was on with Brinson Buckner, the former Panther in Charlotte.
The peg-leg cowboy.
Yeah, but see, it was the most Brinson on air. See where I'm going there?
Yeah, it's not funny because they're spelled differently, and one's a big black guy and one's a skinny white dude.
But I made the joke on air, and it got a lot of laughs.
I think it was the laugh button. Yeah, I could be wrong. Either way, fair enough.
Whatever. Everybody wants to know, they're like, are the Steelers done? Are the Steelers in trouble? Do they need to – do they have to go out and, you know, sign a bunch of young defenders and draft a bunch of guys? And I said no because, look, Kevin Colbert knows what he's doing. He's not an idiot, obviously, and – He's got this defense at least set up where it's reloaded to a degree. I mean, you have young guys like Lawrence Timmons. It's not like Lamar Woodley is old. You know, there are certainly veterans. I mean, Troy Polamalu is older, and you know, James Harrison is no spring chicken.
And the defense,
yes, the defensive line is you know, potentially geriatric depending on how you look at it. But I think that they do a good enough job of signing their stars to a certain number of contracts. You get that first big contract, then they'll hit you with one more if they think you can go, you know, go on to a deep age of playing at a high level. And they also, they're smart. I mean, they draft like the Packers do. They draft years in advance expecting this sort of attrition from their good players. So I don't think, I'm not that worried about the Steelers defense.
Well, that was a big topic. You kind of alluded to it to start, that the Steelers were old after they got curb stomped by the Ravens in week one. And then, even Warren Sapp admitted right before the Broncos went off on the Steelers that they are not, in fact, old. And Rich Eisen was kind of to point out it takes a big man to apologize 4 months later.
Yeah, really. And, I mean, they finished number one in the NFL in defense.
Like, yeah, listen, they have age. There's plenty of guys on that side of the ball who are old. Casey Hampton and Brett Keisel both had, quote-unquote, serious injuries, and they're both well into their 30s. There are questions about how well Hampton played this year, the nose tackle. Keisel had probably one of his best seasons. They'll potentially both be back. Hampton may not be back. They have some serious salary cap issues, and that's on both sides of the ball. And they're going to have to make some tough decisions. James Ferrier may not be back. Lawrence Timmons is still young. He was drafted in 07 with Lamar Woodley. Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu are both in their 30s. Ike Taylor's in his 30s. William Gay is young, but he's a free agent. So there are questions. James Harrison's in his 30s. But also, I don't think that this defense is suddenly old because Tim Tebow was able to do what Tim Tebow had never done previously in his whole entire life, and that's throw accurately down the field. People are actually questioning Dick LeBeau's game plan. I'm not so much against the game plan. If you want to argue anything, maybe they didn't make adjustments at halftime. But at that point, I'm still convinced that Tomlin and LeBeau thought there's no way that Tebow can continue to do what he's doing, and he continued to do what he did.
Yeah, I mean, look, you. I mean, here's what you could look at is you look at as we said on Sunday night, they said we're gonna stop the run and make Tim Tebow pass, and they did that, and Tim Tebow passed, but Ike Taylor had his worst game as a professional. I mean, very bad timing.
not good. No.
Yeah, and I mean, he said so afterwards himself. I mean, very bad timing. Ryan Clark couldn't play because of his sickle cell disease. That's just bad luck and having to go to Denver. I mean, You know, I think if Ryan Clark's playing, I don't think Tim Tebow has the same success he did against the Broncos. Yeah,
I don't know. He may have. They had a lot of things go right. Listen, if Tim Tebow throws like that against any defense.
Yeah, they'll beat the Patriots if they play like they did.
And the defense only has 1.5 cornerbacks, then I like the Broncos' chances.
Yeah.
Because no one anywhere expected Tebow to do that. So, you know, quote unquote, hats off to that nerd. And but no, the defense has been old the entire year. So they'll be old next year, too. It's just a matter of will they continue to play well, and I think they will. Their biggest issue this year was stopping the run. It wasn't that their pass defense was, depending on which who was putting up the numbers, was somewhere between 1 and 5. So that wasn't the issue. And they'll just like everyone else, they'll be a year older. They're not going to be old and suddenly awful. They'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, people age, but, I think people are jumping the gun. I mean, the Steelers have been successful for like 30 years for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like they don't drop off the face of the earth. I mean, they got plenty of talent. What about Hines Ward? Mike Freeman, I think that some people took his report the wrong way. Mike Freeman reported that teammates of Hines Ward were telling Freeman that they expect Ward to retire. And so it started getting out there that Ward was going to retire.
Well, to be fair, no, Freeman's right. He got a text from a Steelers player that said that player expected Freeman to retire. The headline on CBS was, is Hines Ward
expected to retire?
Yeah, Hines Ward is expected. And that sort of is misleading.
Yeah.
Because that's not what Freeman said. That's not what the Steelers player intimated.
So now we get to find out if the editors of the site listen to the podcast.
Well, we'll see. But, yeah, so that sort of prompted Hines Ward. Well, he got a ton of questions about it at the headquarters.
Understandably, too. I mean,
on Monday, and he said no on his Facebook page. So I take that to mean, well, he said he hasn't made a decision yet. He hasn't thought about it. So maybe he'll think about it tomorrow. Or
I think he retires. What about you?
If he doesn't, he might get cut because he's making a lot of money. As J.J. Cooper, one of my Steelers buddies, pointed out, he can't get open anymore. And
right. He's fourth? Fourth on the depth chart?
Fifth
behind Jericho. Kotcher. Yeah, Kotcher. Yeah.
So he can't get open. I don't know what he's – I used to joke that he was a glorified tight end, but if he can't get open, he's not even that.
Right. I mean, he's a – and, you know, he really – not that it was forced, but, I mean, like, they made a concerted effort to get him his 1,000th catch this year.
So. Well, the joke there is that, okay, this is your retirement party. Here's your gold watch. Don't come back next year because we're not going to throw you another party.
Well, and, you know, I wouldn't want to see him play anywhere else. I mean,
no, I don't think he would, and I don't.
He's
I don't
a Steeler. Know where, I mean, like.
I don't know who would be interested in him, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, we look at, like, teams with bad wide receivers. They're not as bad as Hines Ward.
Jets might pay him a lot of money.
Jets will give him,
no one else would
give or the 49ers will give him, like, you know, $7 million and cut him halfway through the year.
Right. But, I think it would be in his best interest perhaps to retire, but who knows? Maybe, you know what happens sometimes, and not necessarily with older players because they are just kind of on the downside of careers, but a lot of times guys don't play well, and it turns out we find out in June that they were hurt.
Sure.
I don't know if that's the case with him or he just really is getting old.
Go ahead.
I was going to say he was drafted in 1998. That's a long time ago. You were, what, 3?
4. But he's he's old, and the four, you know, Cotry's playing above him. I mean, he's clearly the fifth best wide receiver on that team now. Speaking, we didn't mention this in pre-planning the podcast, but talking about another team going forward, Brian Van Gorder took his mustache and hauled off to Auburn. He's the Falcons' defensive coordinator. It's strange because they finished 3rd against the rush in the NFL this year.
You wouldn't have known it Sunday.
No, you would not have, and. It makes me wonder. Mike Mularkey's interviewing for head coaching jobs. I ripped him on the Sunday podcast just for the conservative play calling. It makes you wonder if there wasn't some writing on the wall indicating that there would be changes coming in Atlanta. Yeah,
maybe. I don't know.
I mean, that's pretty strange. I mean, he didn't go to Auburn. I mean, he's coached at Georgia before, so he's a he's Mark Richt's defensive coordinator. But I mean.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's not a parallel job. You don't do that.
Well, you could say the same thing about O'Brien leaving the Patriots for a
potential. No, but he took a head coaching job.
But that Penn State job is not a good job to have right now. And if the word on the street was that O'Brien was moving up, quote unquote, in NFL in the eyes of NFL personnel men as a possible superstar in the making or whatever, you know, when the next young hot
right.
coordinator. So if I'm sure there are other things going on that we don't know about, clearly, because why would Van Gorder's mustache tell us?
No, but he wouldn't.
I'm not completely surprised. It could be any number of things. He couldn't – maybe didn't get along with certain other coaches. Mike Smith is supposed to be an extremely nice guy, but – and I was going to compare him to last year guy. What's his name? The coordinator who left the Ravens last year to take the Michigan coordinator's job, but he actually – was good friends with
Brady Hoke. Yeah.
So there actually is a tie there. But as you point out, Van Gorder doesn't have an obvious tie to Auburn.
No. So, other than people in Auburn like mustaches or something.
Yeah. And if he grows a mullet, he'll be perfect.
And by the way, look, Van Gorder's unit outscored Malarkey's unit on Sunday. So
so did Eli Manning all by himself throwing the ball into the ground all in the end zone.
That's true. I guess my point is I just wouldn't be surprised if the Falcons aren't upset if Malarkey gets a head coaching job somewhere.
Right. But you know what? I wrote about this in Coach Killers on Tuesday. If you want to be upset with someone, be upset with Dimitroff for wasting all those picks on Julio Jones, who I like a lot, but I think we both agree that they way overshot what they were trying to accomplish.
Yes, they did. And if you're going to, you know, if you're going to give Cleveland all those picks to get Julio Jones, at least throw the ball downfield.
Hey, by the way, before we forget, let's talk to MBS about this because I asked him about Julio Jones, and I also want to ask him about James Harrison, which we'll talk about after the convo.
All right, cool. Let's hit it up.
All right, it's Week 18. The first round of the playoffs are officially in the book, and as always, we're joined by Michael David Smith, who you can find at ProFootballTalk.com, MMAFighting.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael Dav Smith. MDS, we are commiserating. The Lions and the Steelers both lost. In convincing fashion, perhaps more so for Pittsburgh than Detroit. How are you hanging in there?
You know, it was tough Saturday night into Sunday for me as a guy who grew up rooting for the Lions and has only seen them win one playoff game ever. But, you know, it was a game that I didn't think they would win going in. I did think they would keep it close, which they did for about 50 minutes. And in the last 10 minutes, they just simply could not get off the field on defense, and the Saints really pulled away in the end. But I also think there are a lot of things to be optimistic about for Lions fans, so I don't think Lions fans can be too disappointed, even though certainly the methodical way the Saints moved down the field in the second half against Lions defense is very disappointing.
So let's talk about that. What do you think? How do you think the rest of these playoffs are going to play out, especially we'll start on the NFC side first, given how well the Saints are playing right now?
Yeah, it's tough to see what a defense is going to do to slow down the Saints the way the Saints have been playing. I would say that the 49ers have a better defense than the Lions do, so the 49ers have a better chance of doing that than the Lions did. But it's going to be very difficult. I mean, the Saints just have so many weapons. They have such a phenomenal passing game, and I also think maybe their running backs are better than people realize. The way they have different running backs who can do different things, Chris Ivory, Pierre Thomas, Darren Sproles, depending on what they need from a running back on a given play, they can get a lot of different things from a running back, and obviously their passing game is lights out. So it is going to be difficult, and it's not surprising that the Saints are actually favored on the road, which you don't see that often. Usually the four teams that earned the byes are favored in that divisional round for good reasons, but in this particular case, the Saints are a road favorite in San Francisco, and it's easy to see why. Saints are going to be a very tough team to beat.
So the Giants beat the Falcons handily, and they'll be facing the Packers, but I want to talk about the Falcons briefly because I want to ask you this. They scored 2 points against the Giants, and that was courtesy of Eli Manning short hopping a ball out of the end zone for a safety. But going back to last April, Thomas Dimitroff, the Falcons GM, traded a ton of picks to trade up and get Julio Jones, who he thought would be the final piece of the Super Bowl puzzle. And I can't imagine his thought process was, well, this will serve us well as we make the Super Bowl run in the next 3 years. I'm guessing it meant we're going to win now. They lost in the first round of the playoffs. At the time that he made the trade, he talked to Bill Belichick, who was a friend of his. And Belichick said, I don't like the move. I would take Jonathan Baldwin, who ended up going later in the first round to the Chiefs. How do you assess this Julio Jones trade now that the Falcons have again lost in the first round of the playoffs?
Well, it's something that you and I discussed earlier, I think, with the Carson Palmer trade, that big trades of giving up a lot of picks for one player, those are trades you make thinking we're a Super Bowl team and this is the last piece, as you mentioned. And it's the kind of pick where just about anything short of a Super Bowl, you look back at it and say, boy, that's not the pick we should have made. And it's not a knock on Julio Jones, who's a good player. I mean, he's going to be a fine receiver, I think, for a long time with Matt Ryan. But it's just that when you're giving up the kind of depth you can get with all those picks Falcons traded, you better get a player who is the difference for you getting to the Super Bowl, not a player who's going to be there when your offense never puts any points on the board as they lose in the first round of the playoffs. So that's, to me, it has to be viewed as a disappointment right now, even though Julio Jones is a fantastic talent who might end up being in a bunch of Pro Bowls. I mean, he is a good player, but I think that you just cannot give away that number of draft picks. It's too much to me to give up, and I think the Falcons shouldn't have made that move up in the draft.
I agree. I agree completely. And that's sort of one of the takeaways I have from their Falcons season. It's been extremely disappointing, I think they would say that, especially how it ended. Absolutely no offense. Mike Mularkey might leave, which they might very well be happy with. But and looking back, and it's easy to look back, but I just am not convinced that it was the right thing to do. Speaking of that, we talked about this probably 6 weeks before it gained any traction. We actually discussed whether Hugh Jackson should be fired. And now it seems like they've hired Reggie McKenzie, and that will be a topic for conversation, I do think. How do you think that might play out?
You know, my guess right now is that Hugh Jackson probably keeps his job, but it's close. And it's clear if they had already decided Hugh Jackson were staying, they would say we've already decided Hugh Jackson is staying. And the fact that they haven't said that indicates that Reggie McKenzie is at least exploring that possibility that he's going to make a change at head coach. And, you know, people have said, well, they have the same agent. And you know what? That doesn't matter. If Reggie McKenzie decides that Hugh Jackson's not the right guy for the job, then Reggie McKenzie is going to fire Hugh Jackson. And I think that has to be considered a possibility because the Raiders, even though they're showing some progress, they didn't get where they wanted to go, and they didn't get where they traded those draft picks to go to. It's pretty crazy, Ryan, when you look at what the Raiders have in this year's draft. They've used three of their first four picks on quarterbacks. They used their first-round pick on Carson Palmer, their third-round pick on Terrell Pryor, and their fourth-round pick on Jason Campbell. That's nuts to give up your first, third, and fourth-round picks in the 2012 NFL draft on quarterbacks and to still not be sure that you've got the right quarterback on your roster. That indicates that you haven't done a very good job at that position. And that's not all Hugh Jackson's fault, by the way. I mean, he wasn't there when they traded for Jason Campbell, but he wasn't the guy calling the shots anyway when they made that move. But to me, I think it has to at least be a possibility that they fire Hugh Jackson, and I would really consider it if I were in Reggie McKenzie's shoes, because the bottom line is that they didn't win the AFC West, and that was a very winnable division this year.
No, that's right. We'll get back to the AFC West in 1 second because we have to talk about Tim Tebow, of course. But I wanted to ask you, Jason Pierre-Paul of the Giants declared that New York would win this weekend in Lambeau Field. I don't know if that much matters, but what are your thoughts on that game? Because as it stands, most people are leaning towards Drew Brees and that offense being superior to the Packers, even though the Packers lost one game.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers have an awesome offense. There's no question about it. And the Giants didn't do, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul is talking, and a few other guys on the Giants defense are talking about how confident they are. Let's remember, the Giants defense already got their shot at that Packers offense, and they didn't play well against them at all. I mean, you know, they played well by the standards of how teams played against the Packers this year, but they did not play well against them. Aaron Rodgers had 369 yards, four touchdowns. They win 38-35. And the Giants defense didn't play well in that game. It was Eli Manning and the Giants offense who kept them in that game. It was a very high-scoring game, very entertaining, exciting game. I don't think the Giants defense should really be talking based on the way they played against the Packers offense last time around. But I would also say that front four, I think, can get some pressure on Aaron Rodgers and at least maybe keep things interesting. I mean, I'm not picking the Giants. I'm picking the Packers to win that game. But I do really like the Giants front four. I like Jason Pierre-Paul a lot, as I think everyone does. And I like the way Eli Manning has been playing. So I think this could be a closer game than the point spread would indicate, and a closer game than I think a lot of people are looking at. But in the end, the Packers are the better team here, and it would be a pretty big surprise if the Packers don't win this game.
All right. Tim Tebow took 3 weeks off. He did some contemplating and came back Sunday against the Steelers and went absolutely bananas. He had, I've said this probably four times now, the best game he's ever played at any level, I would imagine. I've never seen him so accurately throw the ball more than 10 yards down the field, and he was hitting on 50-yard bombs regularly. Let me ask you this. There's some people, Steelers fans in particular, complaining that they weren't impressed with Dick LeBeau's game plan, and I'm assuming the game plan was stop the run no matter what and then make Tebow complete long passes. Do you have any issue with that game plan going into that game?
Well, I don't have issues with it based on what we knew about the Broncos, which is that this was a team that had just put up 3 points against the Chiefs, and Tim Tebow had just gone 6 of 21 for 60 yards. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with playing against Tim Tebow the way they played against Tim Tebow. Now, every now and then, Tim Tebow is capable of doing amazing things. I mean, you said the best game he's had at any level. There was one game against Alabama when he was at Florida where I remember seeing him and thinking, boy, he can make some throws at certain times. And I was kind of shocked by it because I had always been saying, well, Tim Tebow just can't make the throw. There was one game in college at Alabama where I wavered a little bit on my belief that Tim Tebow can't be an NFL quarterback. And then this was like the second time I've wavered on that belief that he can't make the throws, because he did make throws downfield and Dick LeBeau paid for his game plan. At the same time, though, let's remember, he still completed less than 50% of his passes against the Steelers. He made some real terrible passes. I mean, Ryan, you and I talked about one. There was a wide-open pass over the middle where he threw it into the dirt. I mean, he had some ugly passes, too. But he had five completions of over 30 yards. So, I mean, he made enough passes to win the game, and you have to give him credit for that. But no, I think the Steelers had the right game plan, stop the run first and make Tim Tebow beat you with his arm. And unfortunately, Tim Tebow beat them with his arm.
He sure
did. I don't think he's going to beat the Patriots with his arm, but we have now seen enough from Tim Tebow that people like me, who just did not believe he could even be an NFL quarterback, have to at least admit we were wrong about what he has accomplished so far. He has done much more in his career so far as a quarterback than I expected him to. Whether it works in the long haul, I'm still a little skeptical, but hey, he's done a lot so far, and you have to give him credit for what he's done, especially what he did against the Steelers.
No, that's right, and you and I joked about this Monday, I think. The real losers here are John Fox and John Elway, because now there's no way they can go back on their commitment to Tim Tebow for 2012. I mean, do you now? We talked about this before, too. We thought that maybe they would bring in a veteran quarterback and perhaps challenge for the job in 2012. Do you think that, I mean, that changes, right?
Yeah, I think that does change. I mean, I think Tim Tebow has to be the undisputed starter where the Broncos are drafting in the first round. There's not going to be the kind of quarterback you can bring in and call him a starter right away. I mean, there's not an Andrew Luck, and there's not a Robert Griffin III for the Broncos, and the other two quarterbacks that people really like, Landry Jones and Matt Barkley, decided to go back to college. So the Broncos aren't going to be drafting a potential starter in the first round. I don't think they're going to be signing a potential starter as a free agent either after what Tim Tebow did. You know, what veteran who thinks he has a chance to start wants to sign with the Broncos where he knows that if he does his job and wins the starting job, he'll be the most hated man in the city because they love Tim Tebow so much there. So I just don't think that's going to happen. I think the Broncos have no choice but to say, yeah, in 2012, this guy is our starter, even though we all know when John Elway and John Fox took that job, They did not view Tim Tebow as a starter. That is why they had Kyle Orton in place as their starter at the start of the season, and why they really only gave in and gave Tim Tebow the ball because Kyle Orton struggled and because that team was so bad early in the season, 1-4 to start the season. They felt like they had to do something to provide a spark. Tim Tebow has provided that spark. I'm skeptical. I'm still skeptical that he can provide that spark for an entire 2012 season. I'm guessing John Fox and John Elway deep down are still skeptical too. But at this point, Tim Tebow has given them no choice but to make him their starter for another year.
Okay, one last question. During, I think it was the second quarter, maybe even the first quarter of that Broncos-Steelers game, Eric Decker had his knee blown up by illegal James Harrison hit. James Harrison was in coverage some 15 yards down the field. Decker made a nice catch on a pretty good throw from Tebow. Harrison went low and collapsed, basically collapsed Decker's knee. He was done for the game. He might be done for, I'm not sure what the reports are, if he's done for the season or not. The players had been screaming that this was a potential side effect to these new rules back when the rules were announced. Do you, what are your thoughts on the hit? Because that was my first thought when Debo did it. I call him Debo, James Harrison. What were your thoughts when that happened? And do you think there will be any kind of pushback at the league because of it?
Well, my thoughts are James Harrison did exactly what the league office has been begging him to do, which is lower his target. And my other thought immediately was, my God, that looks terrible with Eric Decker's knee. Now, the most recent report I heard was they actually think Decker dodged a bullet. It's an MCL sprain, which is not a bad knee injury. It looked like a terrible knee injury the way his knee bent and with the force that Harrison's hit impacted his knee. So it sounds like Decker got pretty lucky. But, yeah, you know, Harrison did what he's supposed to do now under this new NFL emphasis, but a lot of NFL players do not like that at all, don't like this whole idea that now we're going to start getting hit lower in the body. There's not much else you can ask Harrison to do, though, once you've told him don't hit the head. Now he's hitting low. John Elway made the point after the game. He said, listen, James Harrison has been fined for hitting high. Now he's hitting low, and Eric Decker's MCL was the victim of a low hit from James Harrison. That's what happens, and I think James Harrison did exactly what he's supposed to do on that play, so you certainly can't blame him. I'll also throw in, I thought James Harrison got ripped off on a bad roughing the passer penalty. I think James Harrison, on that little shove of Tim Tebow, did what he's supposed to do and got penalized anyway. So I don't think James Harrison did anything wrong at any point in the game, and that's just the fact that James Harrison is going lower now, and knees are at risk when you're going up against James Harrison now.
No, that's right, and it's a new NFL, like it or not. All right, MBS, as always, thanks. Again, we continue to commiserate, and hopefully we'll feel better next week when we talk.
All right, good talking to you, Ryan.
All right, so we mentioned at the top of the show, and we just heard from MDS. What do you think? Now, John Elway made these comments after the game. He said that he didn't think James Harrison was trying to hurt Eric Decker. I don't either. We've seen Harrison hurt people before. It doesn't look like that. What are your thoughts about him going low on Decker? He was good 15 yards down the field, too. It wasn't just a cheap shot, I don't think.
No, I think that Harrison was trying to avoid getting fined and ended up blowing out Decker's MCL. I mean, yeah, Harrison – here's the thing with Harrison is that I would bet, and I don't know this, and I'm not
a mind reader.
No. I'm certainly not a mind reader, but I would bet that with his suspension and with the NFL office watching him heavily, that he's been instructed that he could be thrown out of a game for laying a helmet-to-helmet hit.
What's worse if you're a player, having no knees or getting knocked in the face one time and having to go to
having no knees? I mean, that's a career-ending hit right there, you know?
And you can't even blame a medicine ball from Tebow on that. It was actually a good throw.
Yeah. No, I mean I'm sure Eric Decker would rather get hit in the head than get hit in the knee there.
Just don't touch the face. That's his moneymaker.
But the league, he's a handsome fellow. Yeah. But the league has made it clear that James Harrison's face should not be near anyone else's face.
And it wasn't. And look what happened. And look, players have been complaining about this from the moment they changed these rules to making only a dime-sized part of your body open to being hit without penalty. So I don't know if we'll hear more about this. I joked before that the players could complain to D. Smith and he wouldn't do anything about it.
Right.
Which seems to be his MO. So I don't know what you do other than protect your knees.
I mean, maybe the flag should be attached to the chest going forward.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's sort of
the flag football joke.
The follow-up joke. That's right. No, I got it. Thank you.
But yeah, but I mean, look, good on Harrison. He made a legal tackle. It just blew out Eric Decker's knee.
Good on Harrison. And sorry, Eric Decker.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Wrong Eric. Place, wrong time.
Maybe he's lucky. It's only his MCL, so he's gonna he could potentially play on Saturday against the Patriots.
So more upsetting that the unfortunate circumstances that surrounded Eric Decker's season, perhaps, or the fact that the officials called that a catch on the field.
Yeah, the officials are blowing things left and right. I'm sure you talked about this with MDS. The league came back and said that in the Saints Lions game that the fumble that was ruled Detroit's ball but couldn't be advanced because of an inadvertent whistle actually should have been the Saints' ball.
Why?
Because the inadvertent whistle means it's not challenging. It's not challengeable. Just like in the Steelers-Broncos game, everybody's upset because the Steelers got to keep the ball. But that's
according. I'm upset by that, actually. It's so awful.
Yeah, because it was such a terrible play by Mike Wallace. But it was a backwards lateral, and because of the rule, the Broncos couldn't challenge it. In the Lions Saints game, it was ruled Lions ball, but they just couldn't advance the ball. But the thing is, it should have been ruled Saints ball because it was inadvertently blown dead. They have to do something to fix this. I mean, this is a ridiculous rule that if it's inadvertently blown dead, I mean, that's when bad refereeing and knee-jerk whistleblowing, literal whistleblowing, clearly affects the outcome of the game.
I agree. And I know these guys practice hard and they take tests and they all know the rules. But not a weekend goes by. And we're not talking about stuff like they miss a holding call or they call the pass interference it should have been. Those things happen. But sure. This is stuff that just absolutely – although the Bengals might complain that there wasn't a pass interference called in that Week 17 game against the Ravens that potentially cost them – well, it didn't cost them anything. They ended up losing anyway. So.
Well, I mean, but pass interference is a whole different animal. I mean, just make it 15 yards.
Yeah, well – yeah, there's some middle ground between 15 and 50.
Well, yeah. I mean, or make it 15 yards, and if it's a DB just shoving a wide receiver, then make it spot of the foul. I mean, you can make that. I'd be fine with that judgment call for refs. I mean, if it's flagrant.
Well, that's the thing. When you start letting these guys make judgments, it's when you get into trouble. I'm not saying guys as in all officials are bad, just that it seems to be problematic.
But I mean, you can clearly delineate between intentional and unintentional pass interference.
You think, yes, but when the rule book is 5 million pages long, and Mike Prayer admitted that it took him a long time to learn the rules. He doesn't know all the rules, and he was the head of officiating for decades. That should tell you
all. He didn't learn all the rules until he went to Fox.
Yes, when he was required to.
Right.
But, I mean, he did
not,
say
not,
that.
Not it, when he was making them, when he was required.
He did say it, the rule book is very difficult, and it's not something you can learn overnight or even in a year as an official, not just someone randomly reading it for fun. So, I mean, that to me said there are too many rules to start with, and some of the rules contradict other rules. So there's a whole gray area, and it makes people very upset, and you know, especially this time of year when it costs teams seasons.
Right.
I don't think it costs a team a season yet.
Might have cost the Lions.
Yeah, well, that's a stretch.
How do you fix these inadvertent whistles? Because I mean, it is a big deal. Like
quibble on the whistle, it should be the first thing they talk about in day one of training officials training before the start of the 2012 season. Why do you have to blow the whistle immediately? What's the benefit of that? Why can't you wait to see how the play unfolds?
Well, here's the problem is that if the play, all right, let's say, well, and actually the good news is now that scoring plays are reviewed, had the Lions taken that to the house.
Exactly.
It would have been automatically reviewed.
And I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, you can't be blowing the whistle and then bringing things back 15 seconds later. Well, you can because now how many times.
Because you can fix it that way.
Well, how many times have you seen officials throw pass interference penalties a good 20 seconds after the play is over, after they've had some discussion from the other side of the field?
All the time. And intentional grounding. They did it again.
Yeah. Well, intentional grounding I get because these guys have to talk and someone's watching where the tackle box is and did the ball get to the line of scrimmage. But I never in a million years will understand why you can wait 20 seconds to throw a pass interference penalty from the other side of the field when you were watching something else.
No, I agree.
And it's never overturned. So you can still have a time between the play ending and a decision being made And while it may upset some people as conspiracy, the alternative is what we saw this weekend with Mike Wallace getting a break and then the Saints getting a break.
All right, so what's the biggest rule that the competition committee and that the NFL needs to fix in the offseason? Now I'm thinking about writing a top five rules that need to be fixed. Because you got the you got the Calvin Johnson rule. I mean, that's got to be fixed, right?
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. Stupid stuff like that.
Stupid stuff. That's like
you could point to the one, was it the Jermaine Grisham touchdown that didn't count?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It 2 feet in, but they had some stupid reason for why that didn't work.
Oh, because he didn't maintain possession through the plane of the.
But he did.
Right, well, but if he'd been a runner and had gotten a handoff, then it would have been fine.
Yes, in fact, if you look at Ahmad Bradshaw's touchdown where the nose of the ball literally broke the plane of the end zone against the Falcons,
and then he fumbles immediately
before he fumbles it, and it was a touchdown.
Yeah,
in which case Grisham's touchdown should have been also a penalty.
Right. I agree. Those things shouldn't be. There shouldn't be a difference, but if you have the ball and you are going for the end zone, you
with control, it is a touchdown.
Yeah, regardless of whether or not you caught a pass or received a handoff.
I'm okay with finishing the catch in the truest sense, where if you catch the ball in the end zone, you fall down and you don't come up with the ball, it's incomplete. Sure. But that doesn't include Calvin Johnson, because Calvin Johnson burnt a couple guys to his crisp against the Bears back in Week 1 last season.
Yeah.
And it's not my fault that they couldn't play defense, and the officials chose to bail them out. So there's that. I think everyone actually understands the tuck rule now, and I'm fine with it. I think it actually provides some sense of clarity in those stupid fumble situations, because every time a quarterback is hit, just assume it's a tuck rule. You can get
right.
I think blowing the whistle early is just overall is a problem. I don't understand the urgency to do that, because 9 times out of 10 they get it wrong. And if you want to look for just other possible rules and fractions that need to be changed, just go and follow any games that Jeff Triplett has done and see what he called, and then in the words of George Costanza.
I think they need to fix scoring play reviews too, because I don't like the fact that if the ruling on the field is that the plane was not broken and somebody is down at the one, a coach is required to challenge that. But if the ruling on the field is that he broke the plane instead of being down at the one, it's an automatic review. I don't like that.
Well, I like the fact that they don't penalize coaches for challenging plays that are clearly not touchdowns that were called touchdowns on the field. I'm okay with that.
No. But I just mean that, it's like if the referee screws up and rules it a touchdown, right, then you get a free challenge.
No, I understand that. I mean, that's not – how do you fix that? You have to make the officiating better. I mean, that's nothing to
or you could, say all plays involving the goal line are
I see.
Challengeable. I mean, I don't know. It just seems like that.
Well, you could say all plays, within 3 yards of the end zone or something. Maybe.
Right. Remember Ben's touchdown against the Dolphins
last year? That was fine because they couldn't – I mean, the Dolphins should have gotten the ball, but they couldn't tell who recovered the fumble at the bottom of the pile when the play was over. So there was nothing that they reviewed it. There's nothing they could do with it. I thought you were going to say the Ben's touchdown against the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl in 05 that people still mentioned about. But
no. Anyway, all right. So let's move on to other things, because we somehow spent 20 minutes on officiating. Cleveland is. We mentioned the Browns before, the Julio Jones trade disaster. They are going to take.
Well, it could be worse depending on who the Browns take.
Yeah, exactly. So what are the? This is I think the Falcons have lost the trade from doing what they were supposed to do this year. Moving forward, they took a step back in the regular season, took a step back in the postseason, and so they lost the trade. I mean, it wasn't a good trade for them.
Right.
Now the question becomes whether or not they lost the trade to Cleveland, because if Cleveland, drafts a superstar with their pick that they got from Atlanta, that's when it really gets awkward, because people start pointing at, so-and-so. So the question is, what will Cleveland do with their picks? Cleveland has the number 4 pick overall, and according to Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, they will take a quote-unquote hard look at a quarterback. And she mentions Ryan Tannehill of Texas A&M, which is totally fine because Tannehill is a good quarterback, but I don't think you can draft him at number 4 overall.
No, I don't think so either. Also, as we were talking, I see the Cleveland Plain Dealer also says that the team could be interested in Kevin Cobb should the Cardinals cut him, which is, to me, says you have Kevin Cobb on your team. His name is Colt McCoy.
You have a cheaper, skinnier, less chinned Kevin Cobb on your team.
Yeah, he looks less like Danny McBride than the real Kevin Cobb. He looks more like I don't know who he looks like, but Dennis the Menace. Either way, I don't know why they would be interested in Kevin Cobb. Although I could very easily see the Cardinals cutting him, which if he gets cut, someone in the front office should get fired, or someone on the coaching staff, or even suggesting they paid that guy $63 million.
Well, they would have paid him. Remember, he used that opt out clause, but they would have paid him. And Charlie Casserly reported on Sunday that speculated that the Cardinals could be a dark horse team for Peyton Manning if he's cut.
That would be awesome.
I think that'd be great.
Yeah, no, I agree. Can you imagine? I mean, Larry Fitzgerald must be saying his prayers.
And you didn't see this because you know, you don't work on Sundays, but Marcus, I think it's Marcus Fitzgerald, is Larry Fitzgerald's brother, and he was retweeting our link, like at Kent. He was like, "Hey, at Kent Summers, ahem," and then like pointed to our link where we talked about the Cardinals getting Peyton. So, I mean, in other words, I think that if Marcus, Larry's brother, is interested in the Cardinals upgrading at quarterback, it says to me that maybe Larry is also interested in the Cardinals upgrading at quarterback.
Well, at the very least, he would like someone healthy because he spent half the season catching balls from John Skelton.
Cobb has a bad pocket presence for the most part. Doesn't really sense pressure well, and also has a history of concussions. I mean, that's not a good combination.
Other than that, he's certainly worth the $63 million they decided to give him. But as for the Browns, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that Robert Griffin's going to solve anything immediately. They have so many problems, but this is a conversation we have every year. I don't know if Pat Shurmur's the guy that should be running the show.
Pat Shurmur would have been the quarterback's coach when they drafted Kevin Cobb. Right, in Philadelphia, because he left Philly and went to be the OC with Spags.
Yeah, I'm not sure where
he was quarterback's coach at Philly before that, and then he left. So Cobb has been there 3 years, I think, right?
Cobb has been where?
Cobb's been in the NFL for 3 years.
No, he was drafted back in 07, I believe.
Guys, he been, really?
Yeah, because you remember Donovan McNabb was sort of upset. They took him in the second round pick, and then
that's right. Cobb's secretly 42.
So, yeah, he's old.
Okay, but yeah, he's gonna be 20. I think he'll be 29, maybe 28, 29. Whatever it is, I think Shurmur was the quarterback's coach when the Eagles drafted Cobb.
You're right. Yep, that's right.
So
he has a history.
There's
with
a connection
him.
There. Yeah.
Although, I mean, the offense they ran last year in Cleveland, teams were predicting. I mean, coaches who weren't even half paying attention. Out of the NFL, we're able to predict the plays that the Browns were going to run based solely on formation. I've talked about this before. So it's not like they were doing anything innovative.
No, And they were talking about, I think Brad Childress has been thrown out as a possible offensive coordinator there.
Great.
Yeah.
He's a good offensive coordinator, not a good head coach, so maybe that's not a bad fit. But they do need something to change because
they're bad.
Whether it's Colt McCoy or Seneca Wallace or Robert Griffin III or Kevin Cobb, I don't know if it's going to make much difference next year. They have so many needs, and if you are Mike Holmgren, you have to get the draft right this year. It's imperative. Otherwise, this team will continue to be awful for years to come.
You know what I would do if I'm the Browns?
I
would trade out of the four spot. I would trade to Miami, and I would pick up extra first round picks.
Why Miami? Why not the Redskins? And that way you can get an extra 2 or 3 first round picks.
You can't trade with the Redskins because the Redskins are trying to hop you.
Oh, I see. But you know what? The Redskins could very easily be interested in trading up to 4 with the idea that they think it'll make it easier to trade up to 3.
No, that's true. Yeah. I mean, trick the Redskins. I mean, last year, the Browns were looking for a wide receiver, and they traded out of that spot to get Julio. So.
And they got Greg Little, and it did not work out.
Right. But, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that the Browns need help in many different areas.
No, that's right. We agree on that. And I think you're right that they should trade down, stockpile picks, and just take everybody.
Because they've got 2 first-round picks right now in this year because they got Atlanta's at 23, I think, or two, it'll be 23 at worst, and they got their own at 4. Trade out of 4, get 8 from, like, the Dolphins or something or whatever it is. The Dolphins will either be 8 or 9 depending on the coin flip with the Panthers. Get that pick. You got your 23 pick, and then you pick up another, first round pick next year from the Dolphins to let them get Andrew Luck. I mean, let them get Robert Griffin III, And even if Griffin, even if RG3 is a stud, you can, you've got ammo to trade up to get somebody like Matt Barkley next year. There's, I mean, at some point, there's not going to be anybody in the draft that needs a quarterback anymore. I mean, everybody's drafted somebody in the past 3 years.
Yeah. I'm fine with trading down. I think you should do that because they have, it's not like they have one or two needs. They have about 20 of them.
Yeah. And I mean, all it boils down to is stop whiffing on your draft picks. I mean,
yeah, you know, that's the bottom line.
Yeah. Really quickly, Tampa Bay coaches, we talked about Brad Childress for Cleveland. They are also potentially going to interview Brad Chilley this week.
Mm-hmm.
He is one of seven old white dudes. Do you think it's Mike Sherman, old white dude, Marty Schottenheimer, really old white dude, Wade Phillips, old white dude. And this is in, you know, I think it's interesting. They're like, you know, awkward code words that are used when you fire your young African-American coach and they say, we need a disciplinarian. Do you think that that's – is there any racial overtones here at all, or am I just
– No, I think it's old school versus new school. I joked – we talked about this before the podcast, and I joked that it's sort of like saying, all right, I've had enough of Obama. Let's get Newt Gingrich in there because he's an old hand at this. I also joked that maybe the Glazers have the coaching list upside down, and they're starting at the bottom, and they just don't know it. But I don't know. They can interview these guys, and maybe one of them, Mike Sherman, has actually gotten some traction as a possible candidate somewhere this year.
I kind of like Shoddy, man. I'm not going to lie.
Maybe if he wants to coach, that's great, and that means that Brian Schottenheimer will have a job should he choose to leave New York, which sounds like it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, then look, you know, I thought it was interesting. He went 14-2 his final year with the San Diego Chargers before he was let go, and right. the four guys. So one of the reasons he was let go is there was a ton of attrition with his assistants, right?
Yeah.
The four guys who left were Wade Phillips, Rod Chajinski, Greg Minuski, and Cam Cameron.
Right.
And now he's like interviewing, he's interviewing opposite Wade Phillips. I think it's crazy. Like all those guys have either had a head coaching job. One of them just got fired as the Chargers defensive coordinator,
mm-hmm.
or they've, you know, had a head coaching job, been fired, been gone back to coaching and it, like Marty's still hanging around.
Cause that's how he rolls.
Right. Exactly. Jeff Fisher, final comment. We'll get out of here. Jeff Fisher, do you like him to Miami or St. Louis?
I'll stick with the Rams. I don't think it matters, but yeah, let's give Sam Bradford, let's throw him a bone.
If you're Jeff Fisher, do you take the money or do you take Bradford?
What do you mean take the money?
Well, the report,
to go to Miami?
The report is Miami will offer more money, but obviously they don't have a stable situation at quarterback.
Yeah. It's easier for me to say take Bradford, but I'm taking the money. I don't know what he'll do.
By the way, it'd be funny too if Peyton Manning went to Arizona and this whole thing backfired and Fisher was in a division with Harbaugh. Peyton Manning in Arizona and the Seahawks who appear to be rebuilding.
Yeah, that'll teach them.
Yeah, that'll really get him. Anyway, as always, excellent stuff. We'll be back Wednesday to talk to Andy Benoit with our film room study, and we'll be back later in the week for a divisional round preview. Ryan Wilson, as always, a pleasure. Don't forget to subscribe to iTunes.